In this ASI cast, Brian Jacobs interviews Matt Green, Global Lead for Digital Media at the World Federation of Advertisers, the WFA. Matt describes the WFA as an insight organisation providing help to its membership across a range of global marketing topics. Many of these topics are raised in this interview, from walled gardens to third-party verification, and from the need for one video currency across all platforms to precision marketing and the likely effect of the introduction of the General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR, and the e-privacy regulation.
Okay, so hi everybody, so this is Brian Jacobs, and today for this ASI cast we're joined by Matt Green, who's the Global Lead for Digital Media at the WFA, the World Federation of Advertisers. So hi there, Matt.
Hi, Brian.
Matt, maybe you could start by saying a little bit about the WFA and what it is. Not everybody will be completely familiar with the work you do.
Sure. Yeah. Well, thanks for the invite, first of all. So WFA, World Federation of Advertisers, we do quite a few different things. Part of what we do is focused on advocacy and lobbying. For that reason, it makes sense to be headquartered in Brussels. I'm not based in Brussels. I'm based in the UK, and I spend my time sometimes I'm on the road. Quite a lot of what I do is traveling to clients. Our constituency is based all around the world. So quite a lot of my time is spent just going to talk to clients and running workshops for them and sort of sitting in with them to help resolve global marketing issues, because that is what WFA is all about, actually. I'd like to think of us as an insight organization. We provide insights to our members on global marketing topics. You know, the idea is that we make our clients go faster by crowdsourcing insights from our communities from the many to the few. And a large part of that is through bringing clients together to solve their own problems. So a lot of my role, as I say, is about traveling around the world and convening meetings of clients to talk about the big issues of the day. And my specialisms are on global media and on global digital marketing. So a lot of traveling around the world, a lot of research pieces. We do a lot of that. And ultimately, the objective is to help clients and help them make smarter decisions.
Right. Well, that's very interesting, because obviously we're talking at the ASI event coming up in Nice in a few weeks' time about, you know, obviously we're focused on audience measurement, but one of the key topics that we're addressing is the subject of the major platforms, you know, the Facebooks, Googles of this world, and the fact that they tend to sort of retain their data, as it were, behind walled gardens. What is your view of that?
Yeah, well, there's quite a short answer to this, really, isn't there? Because as you could imagine, clients, I don't like it. Clients don't like it. My role is to represent clients. Clients have become increasingly public about this, haven't they? And Mark Pritchard's speech, the biggest speech made in marketing for 20 years, according to some, kind of set the tone here. And Keith Weed at Unilever has also been saying similar things, hasn't he? You know, sentiments such as people can't mark their own homework. You know, we need that kind of verification. It's just common sense that you can measure what you pay for. And another one from Pritchard, excuses such as our technology won't allow it. It's just not acceptable. So these are, you know, two of our biggest members, P&G and Unilever. We also work for about another 88 or so corporate members, and a lot of them are saying the same sort of things. So the walled garden thing is a challenge. It's something that we reject. And you consider that close to 100% of our members use third-party verification of some shape or form. And I think something like 63% choose to apply the MRC standards to the inventory they buy, i.e. 50% for one, 50% for two. And a further 30% plan to adopt these standards soon. Mm-hmm. And I think 77%, lots of numbers for you, 77% plan to devise or already have devised their own viewability criteria, be that Unilever's, you know, publicly asserted claim of asserted target of 100% surface area or some other criteria, whatever it might be. But there's a lot of people doing that, devising their own criteria. So, you know, the point is, the principle of independent third-party verification is then critically important, isn't it? But when you have such a substantial share of the market that these platforms represent who are just sort of abstaining from that, then clearly you have a really, really big problem. And yeah, so I think that is a big issue. I think that I wouldn't point the finger just to the big obvious players, because we spend quite a lot of our time in China, and these issues are even more manifest there, because third party verification, third party ad serving is the thing they're trying to get in place there. So we champion these issues, we try and push back on these issues, and we try and find ways to help clients get around it. I think it is really difficult. And I think that we need to continue to sort of push against that. And it's not just measurement, is it? Because it's equally data. And it's a frustration for marketers that one can only leverage the data within those walled gardens. You can't take it out, right? So yep. That's a frustration. As much as the measurement issue, the access to data and the utilization of data within those walled gardens, people want to use that outside of those walled gardens as well.
And I was going to say, do you think that I was about to say that I think that it's clear that advertisers, and certainly the likes of Procter and Unilever, the really, really big guys, are obviously unhappy with this situation. Public statements have made that kind of quite clear. What do you think they/you can sort of do about this? Because to Facebook, Google, and I don't mean to just pick on those two particularly, but just for the sake of brevity, as it were, Facebook and Google are still doing pretty damn well when it comes to ad revenues, despite Procter and Mark Pritchard saying that they're pulling funds out from there. What do you think? What pressure can advertisers realistically bring to bear?
Well, it is that, though, isn't it? That's kind of the most effective action, isn't it? Voting with your feet. And of course, these platforms continue to fare pretty well in the market, and you get a big player stopping spending with them. That's going to hurt, but is it going to hurt that much? What share of Procter & Gamble's revenues does that represent of these major platforms? A big chunk, but not, it's not gonna make a massive impact, is it? I don't suppose. But I do think that is the best recourse, isn't it? That is the best way to act, is to vote with your feet. So I think that's how you can. I think additionally, I think that there are relationships which have been increasingly formed here, aren't there? And we've noticed how many more clients have got direct relationships with these protagonists now. It's really ramped up. So, your joint business plan or whatever you want to call them. I don't know exactly how many of our members have these now, but it's a lot. It's probably something like 80, 90%. I've seen a real flurry of it. And these are relationships that can be leveraged, aren't they?
Yes. I think also the other point is that, of course, if you're one of these large platforms, your ambition is to take branded, serious brand building messaging, isn't it, really? I mean, you don't really want to be sort of put in a box marked only for the direct response use or something. I mean, you want to be in the brand equity building box. And the fact is that if Mark Pritchard or Keith Weed, Procter and Unilever, make these sorts of statements, then, of course, a lot of people do pay attention to what those people say, because, frankly, what Procter and Unilever do today, most other people do tomorrow. Exactly. And if you're suddenly becoming known not as a real channel for real sort of brand equity building activities, then that's not a great place to be, I wouldn't have thought.
Well, absolutely. I think there's some real issues around that direct response versus brand piece. And I think that the whole issue with digital has been that it's being sort of viewed as that the direct response space, and I think that they will seek to and want to redress that, but it is going to be difficult, isn't it? Because there does seem to be a bit of a momentum back to traditional sort of branding tools, and people are sort of increasingly sort of acknowledging that actually traditional sort of marketing methods are still pretty effective, maybe much more effective for branding.
Yes, and the really great thing about, I mean, I worked for many, many years on Procter and a fair few years on Unilever as well. And one of the great things about those guys is that, you know, their basic mantra is work out what works and then do more of that, you know.
Right.
And they're very, very, very good at it. And they haven't built their business and their success over the years by sort of ignoring what works and doing it, you know, doing something that doesn't work quite so well for them. So yeah, I agree with you. I think there is a sort of a move back towards perhaps more what we might perhaps in sort of old fashioned language call sort of more traditional sort of media forms and tried and tested techniques and all the rest of it. Not to say they don't experiment with other things, of course they do, but it seems as if for them in their particular circumstances, the role of some of these platforms perhaps isn't quite as essential as brand building.
Yeah. Well, I'm not convinced you can build a brand from sort of social in and of itself. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point. I mean, when just thinking for a second about these platforms and the sort of video use of them, as it were, so, you know, what you might call sort of, you know, sort of TV by proxy, as it were. Do you think, I mean, there's a discussion about whether or not we need one sort of overarching sort of measurement that takes in TV, you know, old-fashioned TV in quotes, plus TV on other channels like, say, a YouTube or a Facebook, or and indeed video per se on a Facebook or a YouTube or whatever other channel. Do you think there's a need for sort of one currency? Because that's proving to be a big talking point amongst our constituents and our people who come along to our event. And there's some discussion about, you know, if there is a need for that, then how can one go about doing it? Or is it better just to sort of accept that actually, you know what, Facebook is a different thing, or Google or YouTube is a different thing from TV. So in just the same way as, you know, magazines are a different thing, you know. So.
Yeah, and it's an interesting one. I think that WFA has been around since the 50s, and I think probably in its earlier days there was a much greater focus on audience measurement than perhaps there has been in recent years. I think clients have been quite preoccupied with things like programmatic, but I do think there might be a bit of a move back towards these kinds of areas, and it's, I think it's related to what we've just been talking about to a lesser or greater extent. I think it's challenging. I think that you've got web metrics and then you've got TV metrics, and they're both sort of trying to reach out, and I think that there's a danger that they don't meet in the middle. But I do think, and I think our members think as well, that there is a lot of sense in having an overarching metric and measurement system. I think that does make a lot of sense. I think the principle of using traditional panels with return path data, with online census data, with you know, boost panels, and with first and third party demographics is smart.
Yeah, sorry.
I think that the total video systems being deployed in places like the Netherlands and Denmark made a lot of sense. And so I think that is the right way to go. And although you might argue that the tracking of sales, conversions, business metrics are what matters, and, you know, and let the analysis of these numbers guide where we invest, I don't, you know, I think that kind of approach, that kind of thinking, produces more of the short-termist approach to brand building. And, you know, people like Byron Sharp tell us that we need to look at short-term and long-term brand building techniques. And we need to potentially target category and non-category buyers, i.e., you know, wastage is not necessarily a bad thing. So, you know, I do think ultimately then, I think that we do need those kind of measurement techniques which enable us to measure across the whole thing and give us the kind of granularity about where views happened, you know, whether that's on linear TV or on video or on Facebook or wherever else. I think we need to look at the whole and we need to understand how that breaks down. I think that's going to be increasingly valuable. And I think that potentially we might, you know, start to move away from, well, precision marketing is not going away, is it? But I think that, as I say, I think as we start to focus more on the short-term and long-term branding effects, then maybe these kinds of measurement techniques become more valuable than they perhaps have been in the recent couple of years.
You mentioned precision marketing, and that sort of brings us neatly on to, I suppose, the huge change that's going to come next year with the introduction of GDPR and the effect that that regulation is going to have on targeted marketing or precision marketing or one-to-one marketing, you know, addressable and all the other things that depend upon a degree of using people's data to be more precise in how you sort of target messages. I know that WFA has been very active on this GDPR front. I mean, could you give us a quick summary of how you think this is going to impact the business?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. You're right. We do quite a lot in this area. We're increasingly getting engaged here because we see that our members are, they have issues here, and they are, you know, I think there's a lot that's being done on the brand side, more than has been in the past, which is good because it's coming quite soon. Now, I think most brands now have cross-functional GDPR sort of teams, committees in place that are looking at this. But we've also found recently that around 70% of survey respondents recently said that they don't think that marketers are fully aware of the implications of GDPR on future marketing campaigns. And depending on the survey, because we've done a few, between 5 and 10% say that they don't actually know what GDPR is. And that is obviously quite a big concern, and quite a lot also say that they just don't know whether they'll be compliant by May 18. So there are some real issues there, but I am sure we'll get there, because, you know, if you break it down, we're looking at consent, we're looking at data management, and I think we can address those things from a brand side, and I think publishers can address them from their side. You know, consent mechanisms can be put in place, data management protocols can be put in place. I think what's quite potentially really quite challenging, though, is the value chain. I think this is an area where I just see loads of issues, because third parties in the value chain, and I spend quite a lot of my time in, you know, conferences like DMEXCO. I've been there 3 years in a row, and you become keenly aware that many of the brands, the companies on show here within the ad tech space, have built their businesses on the back of third-party data segments. And the future of third-party data is in jeopardy post May 18. So, you know, unless the industry finds a way to deal with the consent mechanisms required, I think we have a problem there. And although I think that consumers, users will generally speaking, be prepared to consent to publishers using their data, i.e., if I'm on the Daily Mail or the Guardian website, I'm likely to consent to them using my data. And similarly, if I'm on a brand owner's website, such as, you know, if I'm on Gillette or Emirates or wherever I am, I'll likely consent to using that brand owner use my data. But the big issue, I think, potentially, is that if I go on The Guardian right now and I switch on my Ghostery app, there are, you know, maybe 25 or 30 trackers there. And would I, as a consumer, consent to organizations such as AppNexus and Criteo and BlueKai and all these guys using my data for targeting purposes? Much less likely, right? And so you just see this whole industry, which is potentially in a bit of jeopardy there. And I'm sure, you know, it's going to rise from the ashes, right? You know, these are versatile organizations, and they'll find a way around it. But I think there's some real issues there.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, I'm sure you follow Bob Hoffman and the Ad Contrarian thoughts on this, and the issue of sort of surveillance and tracking. You know, possibly this is going to be, you know, cleaned up a little bit, as it were, by the introduction of GDPR. And as you say, the third party stuff, people are not aware of that. And the fact that some of these companies do track you around the place and do then start, you know, monitoring your usage of all sorts of things you're not aware that they're doing, I think is a concern. And possibly GDPR could be a really sort of landmark piece of a regulation that could help to clean some of that up.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you've got GDPR, but you've also, and this is where it gets complex, even more complex, is you've got the incoming e-privacy regulation, for which there isn't even a text yet. So we don't really know how that's going to play out, but you've got a double whammy of GDPR with e-privacy. And yeah, it could have quite serious ramifications. It could clear a lot of that up. Maybe it means more power coming back to publishers. You know, arguably they've lost some power in the ad tech ecosystem. It's been sort of ceded to intermediaries. Maybe some of that power comes back to publishers. I don't know. Maybe it accelerates sort of second party data sharing arrangements as a way around. I don't know. But I think, yeah, there are some serious ramifications there. It could make quite big waves. It's amazing how soon it is, yet we still have quite a lot of question marks over what it's going to look like, how it's going to affect the industry.
Yeah, it's interesting. And you mentioned at the start of this conversation, you know, you're talking about Mark Pritchard and his speech, the P&G guy and his speech, and his description, I think, of the value, the chain as being murky at best, I think were his words. Mm-hmm. And I think he's right. And I think, you know, the technology tax and all those issues of all these different companies sort of getting in the way between publisher and an advertiser. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you need some of those, but you probably don't need quite as many as there are at the moment. And maybe this will be a way of getting that a little bit, making a little bit of shining a bit of a light on these topics.
It could be good news for some parts of the industry, ultimately. As you say, it could clean it up. We'll see, won't we?
Yeah. Okay, well, Matt, thank you very much indeed for joining us today, and we very much hope to see you at an ASI conference in the not-too-distant future.
Brian, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
You can listen to other ASI Cast interviews by accessing the archive of recordings at asiconferences.com.